Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Okay, things that invalidate the fast, the mufsidat. Mufsidat, those that invalidate the fast, they don't just make it makruh, they actually break the fast. It will require a qada, and in some cases it will also require a penalty of 60 days fasting. Actions of one who is fasting are divided into four categories. Those that require a makeup as well as expiation. The first category are those things that would break the fast and would require a qada and a kafara of 60 days. Number two are those that require just a qada. Number three, those that require nothing and are not disliked. In some cases you have to break your fast, you're having an asthma attack, or you're having some other seizure or something, and you have to take medicine to control yourself. It will break the fast, but you have to make a qada in that case. Sorry, that's an example of where you have to make a qada. There are some cases where they don't require anything, and there are those that require nothing and are makruh to do so. So the third category was they're not even makruh, whereas the fourth category is that it would be makruh to break it. Let's look at them stage by stage. The first one are those that require qada as well as kafara. This one, I'll just explain it in general first. You see, a kafara is a penalty, an expiation. It's like a punishment as such. That can only happen in the Sharia if you do something major. If you do something major, which is you purposely ate something of nutritional value, right? That means you did that on purpose and you ate something. If somebody ate a stone, swallowed a stone, that is not of nutritional value. It's not something you normally eat. That's very different from a nice chocolate cake. Do you see what I'm saying? So it has to be the charge has to be great for the penalty to be to come into action. So that's just the general crux of this. If one eats or drinks something of nutritional value, meaning something that's customarily eaten. When I say nutritional value, even a pizza would work in this case. It's just talking about not stones or paper, for example, or the end of a pencil, or nails. Right? We're talking about nutritional value here is kind of a general term, even if you eat something that is of zero nutritional value, but it's normally eaten. Right? Just loads of chips, loads of bataka, right? Just lots of carbs. Or something for medicinal purposes. Even that would be, because that is obviously of benefit to you. Or if one has sexual intercourse in either of the two passages on purpose, right? On purpose, then he must make up the fast as well as perform expiation, which is to free a slave. If one doesn't have one, as we don't, he must fast two consecutive months. These are tough, because it's 60 days consecutive. And sometimes what has happened, they've started after Ramadan sometime, and before the 60 days were over, Eid al-Adha came in. You can't fast then, so you have to start again. So you have to be educated to do this, otherwise you're going to put yourself in a lot of trouble. There was a guy who did like 50 something fast and then Eid al-Adha came in, and you have to start again. The only disturbance in between that's allowed is for women, menstruation, because that's from Allah, comes every month. It's easier for them basically, that they will get some respite for 5-6 days every month. If one doesn't have a slave, he must fast two consecutive months. If he is genuinely unable to fast for two consecutive months, some sickness or illness, then he must feed 60 poor people a half a sa' of wheat, or give them equivalent monetary value to each person. Now remember, this is not an option. These last two are not options. They are in succession, in the sense that if you cannot fast for 2 months because of sickness or illness, then only can you pay that. This is, you can't fast for the rest of your life. If you're just sick this year or for these 2 months and you decide I'll just pay it off, you can't do that. This is not a rich man's game. This is a penalty, right? So this is only when you become hopeless and despondent from fasting for the rest of your life, are you able to move to the third option, which is to feed 60 people? Remember that. A lot of people get confused here, and a lot of, you know, wealthy people, they just think you can pay yourself out of it, and you can't. They even try to pay themselves out of qada. But that's only permissible for those who cannot fast for the rest of their life, because they've got a major illness or sickness. If, however, one does one of the above, namely if he eats, drinks or has sexual intercourse out of forgetfulness, you don't remember your fasting, it was the first night, and you know, how do you have sexual intercourse without forgetfulness? That's what I'm trying to say. We've experienced eating and drinking out of forgetfulness. You just forget it's Ramadan, you eat. That doesn't break it. How do you have sexual intercourse? Went to sleep and just in the middle of the night and started the act and just forgot that you're fasting. It's not like, oh, we're fasting. No, just still, you know. This is without remembering. That's out of forgetfulness. If it's not out of forgetfulness, it's by accident, because you shouldn't be playing around like that. It's makruh to play around like that. And if it does lead to sexual intercourse, it will be a kafara, if by accident. Only out of forgetfulness is it forgiven, in the sense that it will break the fast, but it won't be a kafara. So as I said, you can see in all of this, you know you're fasting, but you still take that medicine. This is if you don't need to take it. It's just beneficial, right? If you have to take it where you're struggling, there's an illness, and that you're gonna, you know, fall into an attack, or you've got a major headache or something like that, that won't give you a kafara. But if this is just, oh, I'm gonna take my vitamins, I can't miss them, I have to take them anyway, right? Because you're just a health freak or something like that. Wait, you could go without them, but you still took them, because it wasn't a critical situation, you would have to still do kafara. Or likewise if you ate. So it's eating, drinking or sexual intercourse on purpose, without any kind of extreme situation, that would make a kafara necessary. This is as opposed to, for example, eating stones. You know, just swallowing a stone, for example. Uncooked dough or flour. As ingesting such things only necessitate a makeup, not a expiation. If somebody ate by mistake, how do you eat something by mistake? Okay. No, that's forgetfulness. Mistake is different than forgetfulness. Forgetfulness is forgiven, right? In the Hanafi school, Shafi school and Hanbali school. Maliki is, even if you eat out of forgetfulness, it still breaks your fast. Right? But how do you eat something by mistake? It's not eating, it's really like allowing something to go down your throat by mistake. This is, for example, if you're making wudu and you're washing your mouth out and you're not very careful and you allowed it to go down your throat. That's by mistake. That would break the fast, but no kafara. So if it's done, because it wasn't purposefully, does it? Was it? It was done while knowing you're fasting, but it wasn't done purposely. It was done by mistake, so that won't require a kafara. I don't understand how you could, something I may have to look at, how you could have sexual intercourse by mistake. I just don't see how that's possible. I'll have to look into that. Any action mentioned as nullifying the fast only does so if one did the act while remembering that one is fasting. Another thing which might get somebody out of it is if somebody was really very sick, they just tried to fast, but they were really very sick that they didn't have to fast in the first place. You see what I'm saying? And then they ate something purposely. Because they weren't supposed to, they didn't have to fast in the first place, they decided to. That would absolve them of the kafara. So, expiation is mandatory only if one has made the intention to fast before Fajr, and only if no sickness severe enough to otherwise absolve one from fasting, no menstruation or postnatal bleeding occurred later the day after Maghrib. If one of those things did occur that day, or if the intention was made after Fajr that day, then no expiation is required. Of course, breaking one's fast only for break. Of course, breaking one's fast without a valid excuse would still be gravely sinful. This is one additional point which we don't normally hear about, is saying that if in Ramadan you did not make intention the night before, you made it in the morning, and before, because it's Ramadan, the intention is valid in the morning, right? Before half the day. and then the person purposely broke it, the kafara won't be necessary. But it would be a grave sin to break the fast in the first place. This all ties in with the fact that all of the conditions have to be met on the fullest level, which is that the intention should have been made at night. But tell me, how is it possible for anybody not to have an intention from night and make it in the morning? The only time that that is possible is if you've just slept right from Maghrib to the morning. You had no time, you weren't conscious enough to make an intention. Or you actively said, I'm not sure if I'm fasting tomorrow. And you were not sure if you're fasting tomorrow. You said, I'm going to make the intention in the morning. You had suhoor and everything, but consciously you were like, I'm not sure if I'm... You can't say for this reason, like if somebody tries to get really clever and say, you know, if I make intention in the morning, after Fajr time, then if I break my fast, I won't have to do kafara. So what I'm going to do every day is I'm going to make my intention every day in the morning. Clearly that guy is just tricking themselves, because their intention is really to fast, and they're only trying to say, I'm going to delay my intention until the morning, because of, just in case I break it, I'm newly married and you know, I don't trust myself. But that won't work, because your intention is to fast really. You're just trying to use this intention business to get away with it. And that would be wrong to do that anyway. But genuinely, somebody did not make an intention in the morning, or they were going to travel the next day, so they were thinking of not fasting, or they had an appointment and they were thinking of not fasting, but then came the morning, they got a call that you don't have to travel anymore, tickets cancelled, or they just decided to go later, or their appointment was cancelled, then they decided to fast because they hadn't eaten anything yet, and then they broke their fast by eating something purposely, there will be no kafara for them. Because kafara is on a very, very specific conditions. That all the conditions have to be met, has to be a full-fledged kind of fast. I hope this little point hasn't confused you. It's just an additional point. Does everybody understand the point? If you didn't, raise your hands. Okay. Which part didn't you understand? Okay. It's quite simple. It's not no problem. What we're saying here, and this is the, I think the one additional point that is not understood by many of us, we don't hear about it because it's a very, very specific point, is that for a kafara to be necessary, the intention for the fasting should have been made by at night time. Because if the intention was made at night, then you would have had a whole day of fast, of a complete fast. Because if you made the intention in the daytime, which is allowed in Ramadan, if you made the intention in the daytime, it means your fasting kind of started a bit later, although retrospectively we're going to consider the whole day as a fast. But for kafara purposes, you need to have a wholesome act. So although this is wholesome in a sense, but it's not wholesome in a complete sense, because your intention started later. They're going to take that into consideration if you actually break your fast. If you actually then break your fast on purpose, you have to make a qada, but you don't have to do a kafara. Why don't you have to do a kafara? Because you didn't make your intention from the night. Do you see what I'm saying? Now, I asked the question afterwards, just before people started thinking, well, I'll make my intention in the morning, is that how is it possible that you don't make your intention at night and you only make it in the daytime? The only scenarios I could think of is if somebody slept right through the night from Maghrib to, and they never thought they're going to fast tomorrow, and they never had a time to think about it. Or if somebody purposely for saying, I've got an appointment tomorrow, I'm traveling tomorrow, I'm not going to fast tomorrow, but come the morning they decided not to go and they decided to fast, so that's when they made that intention, right? Then obviously if they did break the fast on purpose, even only qada would be necessary, not kafara. However, if somebody thinks that I'm newly married and in order to save myself, just in case we do something wrong from a major kafara, I'm going to make my intention every single day in the morning, right? That's where I guess it got a bit confusing, because I just want to avoid somebody misusing this, or abusing this rather. I would think that that's a major contradiction, because they do have an intention to fast, they're just trying to use this by saying, I'm going to make the intention in the morning. But if they're waking up for suhoor, they're thinking about fasting the next day, they've really made an intention, haven't they? Either way, it would be, unless absolutely necessary, it would be wrong and haram and grossly sinful to eat and break the fast that way. Even for a person who made their intention afterwards, if there's no reason to eat. Right, the other thing is kafara is only for purposefully broken fast of Ramadan in Ramadan. If you break a nafil fast, if you break a qada of Ramadan fast afterwards, there's no kafara. There's only a makeup. Forgetfulness in this context means forgetting that one is fasting. Not forgetting that such an act breaks the fast. Because that's not really forgetting, that's ignorance that this breaks the fast. So that you would have to pay a penalty there. If one breaks the fast out of forgetfulness, such by eating or drinking, then although the fast is not nullified, he must stop that act immediately upon remembering that he is fasting. You can't say, well, I can take the rest in. You have to spit out and go and rinse your mouth as soon as you remember. So like, and you know, it's okay, you know, I'm still figuring it out. If he fails to do so and continues eating or drinking, the fast will be nullified. If someone else sees the person eating or drinking, like if you see someone eating and drinking Ramadan, you know they should be fasting, should you remind them or not? You're both right. He must remind him of the fast, and it is prohibitively disliked to not remind them. It's makruh tahrimi if you don't remind them. So you have to remind them. Because this is a unified act of worship. Right? You remind them, unless the person is weak, such as a very old person, then you let them eat, because then that's Allah feeding them. So if you think that the person is ill anyway, then just leave him alone and sick. Otherwise you should remind him, brother, what are you doing? It's Ramadan. Nicely, of course. Yeah, you have to be careful with women, because they could be on their menstruation, unless you see them eating every single day of the month of Ramadan, unless they've just had a baby before Ramadan. There are women who don't pray. They use that excuse all the time when they're in a group of people. They won't pray. Oh, I'm not praying. They will use that excuse, but it's like day in and day out they'll use that excuse. Okay, next section. Those that require only qada, no kafara. These are a lot of things. These are very important for us to know, because this is what mostly occurs. I mean, not many people purposely break the fast, but these other things, half of them are accidental things. They will break the fast, but no kafara is necessary. Use of a suppository. A suppository is basically something that is entered rectally into the system from the back, from the anus. Right? These are, you know, suppositories that have some medicine or whatever the case is. Right? That breaks the fast. I mean, in order to conclude this whole chapter, so you don't have to remember each individual article here. Anything that enters into the stomach or the brain, but let's take the stomach first. Anything that enters into the stomach from either the throat passage or from the rectal passage will break the fast. In fact, anything inserted in the throat, even if you feel it will dissipate in the throat and won't reach the stomach, or anything that's entered rectally and you think it's going to be localized and will not enter the stomach, will still break the fast, because we don't know. So they've just, it's like sleeping breaks the wudu. Why? You could have passed wind, but you don't know. Right? But even if you don't know, and even if you're 100% sure that I don't pass wind when I sleep, it would still break the fast. It would still break the wudu in that case. Because it's an apparent cause which we're going to take as the cause. Likewise here, anything going down the throat or rectally is going to be considered as breaking the fast. So use of a suppository. Number two, something not normally eaten even. No use for medicinal purposes, like dirt reaching the body cavity. So even if you eat this purposely, because this is different from the first chapter, wasn't it? The first chapter was that it has to be of nutritional value. Although dirt might have nutritional value here, what we mean by nutritional value there is really something that is customarily eaten. So what we're talking about here is if somebody reaches the stomach, it will break the fast, but no kafara. Accidentally swallowing water while rinsing the mouth. You won't be sinful for that if you were trying to be careful. What I would suggest though there is that when you do wash your mouth, keep your head down so that there's less chance of anything. If you keep your head up, don't gargle, because gargling could cause water more easy to go down the throat. So just keep it down. If you had to have a fard bath in which gargling is more necessary, then what they say is that delay your gargling until iftar time. So you wash your mouth out the best you can without allowing any water to seep through, and then at iftar time, in maghrib time, you gargle, just to thoroughly finish off your. Although washing it to the best of your ability should suffice anyway. being forced to break one's fast. Somebody comes and shoves something down your throat. Or in the case of husband and wife, one or the other forced the other. There's a bit more detail there, that even if, for example, I mean, these things have to be said because they are important, and most people here are married, or I would expect them to be married. I'll try to make it as general as possible so that, you know, we're taking others into consideration, our younger brothers here and sisters maybe. Is that if, for example, initially there was a reluctance, but eventually the other party, you know, one was one started the act, the other one was a bit reluctant fasting, but then they got into it as well, and then it happened, it means both of them are to blame. So if then they can't say it was by force. Initially it was by force, but then they consented afterwards. If it was literally like no, you know, just absolutely no, and there was force only from one side, then in that case kafara is only on one person. The other person who was who did not want to consent at all and did not even find themselves consenting, because sometimes it overtakes them, right? I'm just trying to be clear as possible because we don't want people to make mistakes here, right? They were literally against it, and they were biologically against it as well. They didn't have the desire, was not created, right? They just stayed completely off it. Only then would that kafara not be for them as well. And that's the one time where in a fard fast of Ramadan, the wife has no need to does not have a responsibility to consent if the force is from the man's side. It's not, she doesn't have to consent. She should just move off the bed if she has to, because kafara is a big deal. As I said, if it was still forced and she didn't have any consent at all, and she did not give herself up at all, then the kafara won't be on her. Or the other way around, if it was the other way around. So being coerced to break one's fast. Eating, even if intentionally in the daytime for a fast in which the person did not make the intention before Fajr. So this is the case where you delayed the intention. So kafara won't be necessary, as we explained earlier. But qada will be necessary. The reason why kafara won't be necessary is because your entire day wasn't with an intention. Just for that small loophole. It's really one of those things, isn't it? Number three, ejaculation due to touching or kissing. If there was entry, insertion, then that would make kafara necessary as well. But if there was ejaculation just due to touching or kissing, then that would be makruh to do that, because husband and wife should not engage so closely and so intimately, right, in the first place. Because just light kissing is permissible, but anything that leads to such a thing is makruh tahrimi. Someone pouring water into the body cavity of a sleeping person for whatever reason, some guys, you know, decided to play a joke and pour some water down the throat. Self-induced vomiting, a mouthful or more. Vomiting, this is very important to talk about this. Vomiting, if vomiting just was spontaneous, then it doesn't matter how much you vomit, it won't break the fast. You didn't induce it. So if it's by itself, it won't break the fast. It doesn't matter how much it is. Right, so that's out of the way. If you had to vomit for whatever reason, a bad stomach issue and you had to vomit, it will break the fast if it's a mouthful or more. How do you determine a mouthful or more? It's not by volume necessarily, it's by the pressure. A mouthful in the Sharia is considered that amount which you cannot control with your mouth. Which means you vomited up something and then you weren't able to control it in your mouth, except by great difficulty, because the pressure was great. So if you are able to control it, then it's considered less than a mouthful. If you're not able to, if you're able to contain it very easily, like a small amount came up and you just kind of grabbed it, you know, controlled it, that would not break the fast. This is if you induced it. But if you find it very difficult to control or it came out, that would break the fast. But if you just felt sick and suddenly you just vomited, that won't break the fast. Okay, just a few points on these points. Remember, this is a very brief book. It doesn't necessarily contain everything. I'm going to try to bring in addition points. If you think that there is a point that is missed out, please send them forward. Now, with regards to the private parts, both the vagina and the anus, they are for the woman, the front portion, the front private parts are also considered a passageway, not for men, only for women. Right. So anything placed in the front or the back passageways into the body, it would break the fast. Now, when you say insertion, we're talking about at least the size of a suppository, which would probably mean about a 2 centimeters or something. If it reaches that distance, if it's just placed on the outside, then that won't do anything. But if it reaches inside to about 2 centimeters, probably that will break the fast. If someone else, hence placing anything wet, I mean placing anything wet with water, oil, or the like, even a wet finger, that distance inside either orifice, which breaks the fast. It doesn't have to be a suppository. Even a wet finger, a dry finger, no, but a wet finger, yes, because you've got an additional thing on a finger. Likewise, if somebody inserted a finger and then took it out and then reinserted it, now that it has something on there from before, that would break the fast. Now, that's why when cleaning oneself, istinja, during defecation, when relieving oneself, one needs to be extremely careful. Women for both orifices and men for the rectal orifice, one needs to be very careful. If it's just around the immediate inner opening to clean up, that would be fine. But inserting rectally, one has to be very careful. One has to be also careful that because the anal section, it actually, when a person stands up and clenches themselves, there is a form of a suction. So that's why ulama also say that you should try to dry yourself off. If you use, when you're using water for istinja, you should try to dry yourself off. Otherwise, it is possible that water be taken up. One needs to be as careful as possible, but one need not doubt too much. Oh, maybe some water went up. Just try to be as careful as possible, but then after that, don't be breaking all of your fast because of that, if you know what I mean. Because shaitan loves to take advantage of these situations, especially for the weak-hearted ones that get very doubtful about things. Likewise, the complete insertion of a solid substance such that it disappears into either orifice, which breaks the fast. Even if it's not wet, it will break the fast. So if you have been told to take a suppository, you can't do it during the fast. But the main thing I think that people will contend with is when they're washing themselves, the insertion of the finger. Also, when you're washing your nose, be careful that the water doesn't go beyond the bone at the top and into once it kind of goes into your nasal passage up at the top and you start feeling your sinuses, that means it's gone up. So one needs to be just careful. Those that require nothing and are not disliked. What is this talking about? These things don't break the fast, basically. It's talking about those things which don't break the fast. Why do you think he needs a chapter like this? I mean, aren't there like literally an infinite number of things that don't break the fast? Walking, sitting, looking, that don't break the fast. Why is he going to mention these things? Why do you think he needs to have a chapter of those things that don't break the fast? Exactly, because they would have some confusion there, that I think this breaks the fast because they're similar to something that does break the fast. Also, these last two chapters, one is about those things which someone might consider to be either breaking the fast or makruh. So he's saying no. And in the other chapter, they don't break the fast, but they are makruh. So one is a chapter on the makruhat, and the other one is a chapter on those things which people could confuse as breakers of the fast. Firstly, blood cupping or drawing blood, giving a blood test, as long as it does not weaken one person. So it doesn't break the fast to have a blood test or to draw blood somehow. But if you know it's going to weaken you, it's makruh to do so. Number two, using the miswak, even if used at the end of the day, rather it is a sunnah in the Hanafi school. The reason he had to, why do you think he'd have to mention that? The reason is that according to the Shafi'is, it breaks the fast after half a day, I think. There's some condition there, but they can't use a miswak after half the day or something. For the Hanafis, it's okay, it's sunnah to use it. Use it as much as you like. But you can't use a toothbrush. Sorry, you can use a toothbrush, but you can't use toothpaste. problem with toothpaste is that because it's flavored and it goes on your tongue, to put anything on your tongue with flavor is makruh. And if for some reason some of that goes down the throat, then that breaks the fast. No kafara, no penalty, but a qada definitely. Rinsing the mouth or the nose without any water going down the throat is fine. Although someone might think that's an internal orifice, it won't break the fast until it goes beyond the throat or beyond the top of the nose. Placing a wet garment on one's body or taking a bath due to heat does not break the fast, because that's an external thing that's happening. You can cool yourself down, sit in an AC, or you know, put wet cloth over you. There's nothing wrong with that. Before we go into the next section, I just want to mention a few other things. The following are also permissible and not disliked when fasting: the entrance of water, oil or the like into the urethra of the male organ. So into the male frontal organ, to have water enter into that when washing or whatever does not break the fast. Being in a state of major ritual impurity when true dawn enters, which is, for example, somebody had a wet dream, or the husband and wife had intercourse before the time entered of the fast. They didn't have ghusl, missed their fajr prayer, right? Well, they haven't missed their fajr prayer. They didn't have suhoor, for example, or didn't after suhoor. But they came into fajr time. Now fajr time begins, the fasting begins, isn't it? So entry into the fast in an impure state is not a breaker of the fast. It doesn't break the fast, because you're just entering into the fast. You didn't break it in the fast. Oiling one's mustache or body as absorption, because somebody might think I'm absorbing it internally through the skin. But that's why I mentioned in the beginning, it has to be through the throat or rectally, or directly into the stomach. This is absorbing, doesn't break the fast. Applying kuhl, antimony, surma or the like in the eyes, as absorption through the eyes also does not break the fast. Based on the latter two cases, modern injections and eye drops are permissible while fasting and do not break the fast. I would, though, be careful about eye drops. It's kind of very strange that the older fuqaha, they said that putting something into the ear, oil, not water, but oil or medicine, does break the fast, while putting something into the eye does not break the fast. Whereas it almost seems now that the eye has a stronger connection with the mouth, that if you put something in the eye, you could actually feel it down your throat, whereas not from the ear. So I would just be careful. But if somebody did happen, you get the taste exactly. But if it did happen, and you had to do it, then we could go with this as it mentions here. But I would just avoid the eye drops during the month of Ramadan, unless absolutely necessary. Okay, there are a few other things that break the fast from the last chapter, that break the fast, but don't make kafara necessary. Only qada is necessary. So you can add those points to your copies if you want. Number one, putting oil into the ear, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Oil or medicine into the ear, unless it's water. Water doesn't break the fast if it's entered into the ear, but oil will. With regard to depositing water into the ear, there is agreement that it does not break the fast if unintentional. If done intentionally, the opinion gives preference the opinion given preference in some books is that it does not invalidate the fast. So there's some difference of opinion there, but why would you need to put water into your ears? If it's done when you're making wudu, it's fine. Nobody disagrees with that. But they're saying that if you intentionally start putting water into your ear, then the stronger opinion is still that you won't break the fast. But anything other than water will break the fast when put into the ear. Unintentionally ingesting rain, snow or blood from outside the mouth that enters one's mouth on its own. So it's very rainy and you kept your mouth open, or snowing and whirling snow and you kept your mouth open. Now if it just falls into your mouth, just like a drop, just dissipates there, you don't feel it down your throat, it doesn't break the fast. Once you feel it in your throat, the coldness of it or whatever it is, however you feel it, it breaks the fast. Kafara is not necessary, but qada is, even if done intentionally. Well, actually, if it's done intentionally, then it's like you're drinking water. There's a big stream of it and you just put your mouth under it. This is unintentionally speaking.
The same applies to tears or sweat. If one tastes the saltiness through the mouth and then unintentionally swallows it, it will break the fast. If one intentionally does any of the above, then the kafara is also necessary. Because then it's literally like you're eating or drinking. If one bleeds from within the mouth, you've got bleeding gums, then if the saliva becomes red or pink as a result, and then it is swallowed, the fasting is broken. Because then you're not just swallowing saliva, but you're swallowing blood, because it's more blood than saliva now. If it's less pink, then it won't break the fast. Ingesting leftover food in one's mouth that amounts to the size of a chickpea or more will break the fast. So you've got tooth cavities, and at suhoor time you can clean your mouth out very well. You kept some stock, right? That would break the fast if it's as much as a chickpea. If it's less than that, then just swallow it, they won't break the fast. This is if it's already in the mouth from before. If somebody took it out and put it back in, that would break the fast at any size. If one inhales smoke with enjoyment or for benefit, then both qada and kafara are necessary. He's not smoking, but he's passive smoking and enjoying it. Right? That would break the fast. And if, however, one unintentionally inhales or ingests smoke, dust, water, vapor, steam, or a fly, if something's in the air, for example, and one is just simply trying to breathe, going about normally and ingested any of this, then the fast is not invalidated, and hence no makeup is required. If smoke goes down the throat, or dust, or water, or vapor, or steam, or even a fly, just pops into the mouth and just goes down the throat, it won't break. This is the only time when it doesn't break the fast. It won't even break the fast, because you see, the fly has its own motion, whereas with rain and that, you do have some control. There's the difference. You might think, well, why doesn't rain not break? Why does rain break the fast, and this one doesn't? Because there's a difference here. So the fly is the only thing that you could take down the throat if it goes down itself without you doing anything, that won't break the fast. I'm just trying to make it so that we understand that that's the only thing. Everything else will break the fast. This criteria applies to inhaling anything with a physical body such that one can actually see it in the air. However, if one intentionally inhales scented air that has no physical body, such as the scent of musk or flower, then the fast is not invalidated. So we've got two things here. One is that somebody's got some really nice perfume on. It's just the smell of it. You can't see any physical body. There's no smoke or steam. Then that's fine, because that's just literally the smell. But if it's bakhur, so there's incense, there's a stream of smoke, if you intentionally smoke, if you intentionally ingest that, that will break the fast. Another thing that explains now is that, you know, when they put Vicks into steaming water, do you think that would break the fast or not? Now you know that it will break the fast if you intentionally ingest it. Somebody else is doing it and you just kind of went past and you smelt it, that's different. But in this case, you're ingesting it, you think, oh, this is just steam, or this is just, you know, it's not. Because what happens is that part of the Vicks or whatever you put in there is carried by the steam, and it's supposed to clear up your sinuses or whatever it is. So that would break the fast, because it's a body. It's a subtle body, but it's a body. Okay, the next section, which is the last section. These are those things which require, they don't break the fast, but they're makruh. So these are the makruhat of fasting. They're undesirable to do this. Some of them will be sinful, some of them will be lightly disliked. They don't break the fast, but they diminish our rewards and cause a weakness in our fast to come about. If one tastes some food or chews on it without a valid excuse, but does not take it down the throat, just taste on the tip of the tongue, but doesn't take it down, or chews, or if one kisses his spouse while not feeling secure from ejaculation or intercourse, it is disliked. If one kisses without
you know, while feeling completely in control, it's not going to lead to anything. Just a, you know, just a straightforward kiss, that won't break the fast, and that would be permissible to do as well. But if one doesn't feel comfortable, they feel that that's going to lead to more, then it becomes makruh. The Prophet ﷺ made a distinction here. When an old person came to ask him, he said, yes, it's permissible for you to kiss. When a young guy came to him, he said, no, it's not permissible for you. Judging from one being a veteran in marriage. We're not talking about kissing in which saliva is transferred. We're just talking about a straightforward one. Okay? Because that would, the other hukum, other commands there would come into action. So if one, if however one feels secure from engaging in intercourse or from ejaculation due to kissing, it is not disliked. The following actions are recommended for the one fasting. Okay. This was a very general way of saying what's makruh and what's not. See what I'm saying? So kissing here refers to mouth, which is always disliked, as one might swallow the other's saliva, which would vitiate the fast. It is also disliked for the spouse, two spouses, to lie down or hug while naked. However, to do so while clothed or to kiss others other than mouth to mouth is based on the criterion mentioned above in the text, namely that it is not disliked as long as they both feel secure from ejaculation or intercourse. The following actions are recommended for the one fasting. To have the suhoor, pre-dawn meal, even if only a sip of water. As I mentioned yesterday as well, many people think, I can't eat in suhoor time. I can't eat. And what they mean by that is that eating a lot, eating a normal meal. That's not what the Prophet ﷺ necessarily had in mind. Suhoor could be just a sip of water, a date, a glass of milk, or anything, even at the smallest amount. That's sunnah to do, so do that much at least. If you can't have your dar chawal, your biryani, kari khichdi, whatever it is, you don't, nobody's forcing you to do that. That's not what you call suhoor. Suhoor is just to have something even at the basic level. And the Prophet ﷺ said, "Tasahharu fa inna fi suhoori baraka." Have suhoor because there's barakah in it. To delay it. Now, it's not sunnah to have the suhoor after Isha, after Taraweeh, and then just go to sleep. But it's actually to wake up and to have it before. So, to delay it until shortly before Fajr, yet while being certain not to swallow anything after the Fajr enters. And once Maghrib time comes in, and you're still acting like a macho man saying, oh, I can do another hour, I'm going to delay my iftar, that's a Jewish thing, it's a bid'ah to do, it's not permissible, it's makruh. At the time of Maghrib, without, you know, doing it before the time of Maghrib, it's sunnah to break the fast as soon as possible. As soon as Maghrib time is in, sun set. Now remember, if you're going by what you see of the sun, it's not when the sun just touches down, it's when it actually disappears. So Maghrib, for fasting time to end, is not when the sun just touches the horizon, but it's when the whole orb of it disappears. So it's not at sunset, but it's actually at sundown. It takes about 3 minutes from the time it touches to go down, but you will notice that some timetables have actually a 1 minute or 2 minute difference. Don't worry about that too much. Some give 3 minutes, some give four, some give five. From the calculations they get from the sunset time, where the sun touches down, they normally add on 3, 4, 5 minutes. So sometimes you will see that even between Clapton and here, there'll be like a 1 minute difference sometimes. It's not a big deal. You could go with the later time just to be careful if you wanted to, but you don't have to wait 10 minutes, right? You don't have to wait 10 minutes afterwards. It's sunnah to break it now straight away. To hasten in breaking one's fast, unless it's a cloudy day and you're not going by a timetable, you're going by what you see of the sun. Now, because it's going to be cloudy, you can't really tell when the sun has set or not. So in that day, just that, in that, on that kind of a, in that kind of a situation, you just wait a bit, just to make sure that it's not done early. But when going through timetables, unless you've got a confusion about your clock time, then you should just break it straight away. The following actions during the day necessitate withholding from anything that would vitiate the fast for the remainder of that day. This is saying that even if you break the fast, or if these things happen, now you think, I can just eat. You can't eat. It's still Ramadan. Other people are still fasting. You still have to do what others are doing. That's a very special command in Ramadan only, not for the rest of the fast during the year. If you break those, you can eat. But in Ramadan, if you break a fast, if it happens to be broken, somebody went down the throat, you have to spend the rest of the day also without eating. Obviously, if you did eat, it'd be sinful, but it won't give a kafara because you're not fasting anymore. Do you see what I'm saying? But you still have to act like a fasting person. If one breaks the fast, whether accidentally or purposely or under force, you still have to not eat for the rest of the day. If a traveler, because, why? Because of the respect of the month of Ramadan. You are an able person, you broke it, you've done the sin, khalas, you know, you can take care of that later on, but you cannot eat. If a traveler arrives to his place of residence and was not fasting on his journey, he should now abstain. Because he's got to his destination, he's no longer a traveler, he should now just wait. If he really had to eat, you know, it won't break the fast, there'd be nothing to break, but it'd be just sinful to do that. If a woman in menstruation or postnatal bleeding becomes pure, now there's two issues here. One is that she was fasting and then the bleeding began. Now she can eat, because now she's not allowed to fast. This one is when she was already in menstruation and she became pure halfway through the day. Now, although she can't fast because she didn't start off properly, but technically speaking, she's now able to fast in a sense. So she now has to observe the rule as well and just not eat until the end of the day. If a non-Muslim embraces Islam, so if he embraced Islam at Dhuhr time, for example, you should just tell him, now look, because of the hurma of Ramadan, because of the respect of Ramadan, just don't eat. Even though you're not fasting, you don't eat. Or if a child becomes an adult, he had a wet dream in the middle of the day, right? For the rest of the day now, you can't eat. Shouldn't eat. Okay, we'll carry on inshallah. Afterwards I'll just take these questions and then inshallah it's lunchtime. These questions. Does Jammul Ghafir, the large group, change over time in Hanafi law? It's open. There is no specific amount. So it's up to the person who's in charge of making the decision to determine whether this is a large enough group that they could not have agreed and conspired to tell the untruth. So it really varies from person to person, as long as they're doing it properly, as they're not being too lax about it. So within the law, it's just so open that it just really depends on that person, that it needs to be a certain number of people. So it's there is no stipulation that's changing, that okay, now there's it has to be 15 people, now it has to be 20 people. No, it's not anything like that. There have been recommendations from different scholars that we think it should be this much and that much, but at the end of the day, you can't specify it. For example, we had a major moon sighting committee meeting in America once with the Ulama Council of America, and one of the proposals put forward is that why don't we just have a number like 12, 15, 20, 25, 30? But that was struck down immediately by the fact that the Sharia hasn't done that, because it really depends. If you've got 12 people all from the same crowd, same family, right, that's not going to be as strong as 5 people, one from this state, one from that state, two from that state. That's going to be stronger than 12 people from one family. Even 25 people from one family who are in one location, what they saw, they could have seen a UFO, right? They could have seen something that, you know, the US whatever could have shown something, you know, there could be some show up there, right? Than 12 people from different areas. So it really depends. Can you make a makeup fast at the same time as a mustahab sunnah fast and be rewarded for both if you have intention for both? Okay, for example, you had qada fast. Women have some qada fast of Ramadan. Come Shawwal, there's also 6 days of Shawwal that are sunnah to keep. So they think, you know what, let me keep these 6 days for my qada, and because it's in Shawwal, I should get the reward of al. Have dual intention. If you have a 50-50 intention, it won't work. Right? It'll just go to nafil fast, which will be, you know, Shawwal fast. Your primary intention, according to some scholars, you can't combine the intention. You have to keep qada separate and you have to keep your sunnah fast separate. Others say, look, you make your qada as your primary intention, because they are occurring in Shawwal, hopefully you should get the reward for it. Nobody denies the fact that keeping them both independently is the best way, but some allow it like that. For example, if you've got qada prayers and you wake up at tahajjud time, you should make your qada prayers because of the fact that it's also occurring during tahajjud time. Hopefully you should get the reward for that. But it's obviously best to do qada and then some rakats of tahajjud. So there's a bit of a detail in this case. Do you have to say a specific dua when you make intention in fasting in Ramadan, as we find that on some masjid timetables? Not necessarily, but you can say it. The verbal intention is just to help and assist and focus you. It's not necessary. So you can say it if you want to. Make sure you understand what you're saying. You know, بِصَوْمِ غَدٍ نَوَيْتُ. Most people don't even know what they're saying. They're just saying it. So try to understand what you're saying if you are going to say it. Otherwise, really, it's like you're making a dua. It's like you're doing a dua for barakah, and it's not a dua; it's an intention. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, many of the duas that we read them without meaning, without understanding the meaning. But at least there's barakah there because you know we're asking Allah for something. In this one, we're saying, "I am fasting tomorrow, but I don't know what I'm saying. I just know it's an intention in Arabic, but I don't know what I'm saying." So it's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? So understand what you're saying if you are going to say it. If a person during the month of Ramadan does not wake up for suhoor, wakes up at 10 a.m, does he still need to make an intention even if he didn't have the intention to fast when he wakes up for suhoor? See, if you had intention at night to fast and you were supposed to wake up but you didn't, your intention is done. Your intention is done. Like in Ramadan, normally by default you have an intention every day, unless you're one who doesn't fast certain days because you got sickness or something like that. For most normal people that fast every day in the month of Ramadan, even if they did not wake up for suhoor, if after Maghrib they thought they were going to wake up and tomorrow's still a day of Ramadan, that's a fast. Do other madhabs require verbal intention for fasting in Ramadan? I don't think any madhab requires a verbal intention, because intention is not verbal. Intention is something from the heart. That's why. Intention is something from the heart. So I don't think any madhab requires that. Does Subh al-Kadhib appear after Maghrib or Isha? It appears after Isha. After Isha. Because Isha time only comes in after the redness and slight whiteness disappears. Then after that, when it becomes dark, or unless there's, you know, when there's no moonlight, for example, we're talking about in moonlight there's going to be whiteness. Then there's another whiteness that appears. That's Subh al-Kadhib. Is it permissible to fast on Saturdays with the intention of fulfilling the sunnah of Dawud alayhi salam by fasting every other day? Absolutely, you can fast every other day. As I mentioned, you can even fast on a Friday like that, as long as you're not fasting for the sake of Friday only. Just decide, tomorrow is a convenient day for me to fast, you can fast. In fact, there are some narrations that even indicate a preference for fasting on Friday, as long as you don't make it like just a habit or something like that. But absolutely, for the fast of Dawud alayhi salam, which was fasting every second day, is permissible if that falls on a Friday or a Saturday. But not on Eids and Ayyam al-Tashriq, because that's haram to fast on those days. Example, fasting Thursday, then Saturday and Monday, absolutely fine. Therefore, fulfilling the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Dawud alayhi salam. Dawud alayhi salam, actually you're making some mistake here, because you've got Thursday, you're missing Friday, then Saturday, and you're missing Sunday, and then you're fasting Monday, and then you're missing Tuesday and Wednesday. I would just do that for convenience. I won't do that for Dawud alayhi salam, because Dawud alayhi salam's fasting was every second day. You're not really doing Dawud alayhi salam's fast. You're just adding an extra day. Right? You're just adding an extra day. So I won't do that for the sake of Dawud alayhi salam's fast. I would just say, look, I want to fast 3 days a week, and these are the 3 days I'm going to fast, because it's convenient for me, it gives me enough lag in between. So to a certain degree, it might be a bit of a resemblance with Dawud alayhi salam's fast, but it would be permissible. Asthma pump does break the fast. You will hear fatwas that it doesn't break the fast, it goes directly to the lungs, but proper research has shown that although most of it does go to the lungs, parts of it do go into the stomach. The other thing is that what the fuqaha have said is not that whether it reaches the stomach cavity, it's just that it reaches the cavity it just reaches the cavity inside through the throat. Because it goes down the throat, it would. Having said that, yes, it does break the fast. Having said that though, if somebody has an asthma attack, they are struggling, they will break their fast. They should take the pump and break their fast. They keep qada of it afterwards, they don't have to do kafara, because it was serious. If we cannot fast due to ill health, then do we have to make kafara for each fast that we miss? Okay, kafara is only at breaking the fast. Starting the fast and then breaking it purposely. It's not for not fasting in the first place. So if someone, whether they're ill or sick, or on purpose doesn't fast that day, lazy, just doesn't fast that day, I'm not going to keep a fast today, that doesn't necessitate a kafara. It's haram, it's wrong, great sin. It doesn't necessitate a kafara. Kafara is only after you keep it that you break it. Right, so make that clear. If you have a wet dream during your fast, does it break the fast? Wet dreams don't break the fast if they're purely involuntary. If we have fluid medicine straight into our vein, does it invalidate the fast? Not an injection, no. Fluid directly into the veins don't break the fast, because it's going through the muscular system and the venal system. Do you have to withhold even if no one else can see you eating? Absolutely yes, because it's hurma for the month of Ramadan, not just for someone else. It's a good question though. Yes, you have to withhold. Will asthma pump break fast if taken while fasting, one gets an asthma attack? Not if it's an asthma attack. It will break the fast though, but it won't be haram to use it, because you have to take it, health reasons. Is it permissible to use mouthwash when fasting? It's makruh, because it has a flavor and a taste. This is as long as it doesn't go down the throat. If it does go down the throat, it breaks the fast. Could you kindly go over the true dawn and false dawn? Which one indicates fajr? True dawn indicates fajr. There's a very clear difference. False dawn disappears, becomes dark again. Right. True dawn then remains and just becomes brighter and brighter and brighter until sunrise. And true dawn comes more predictably about, you know, so many minutes before sunrise, whereas false dawn can come at any time. I don't think you should be very confused about that. It's a clear difference between the two. When you say one of the two basic rights of the husband is for the wife to go to him when he wants, does that include when she is on her way to work and will get late if she stays and fulfills his right? I think that needs to be an understanding from before. That needs to be an understanding. It's his right. If she's working without his permission, then basically she's not fulfilling his right. I don't want to make this a husband-wife rights issue, right? Because you know the focus is when the focus on only on the wife, women sometimes feel that we're not talking about husbands, but they have, you know, the women have rights that the husbands have to provide them as well. But because it's a very specific question, it just needs to be an understanding. If she has to work for whatever reason in a permissible environment and the husband is fine with that, then he should not do that. He should not, you know, stop her from that. But if she's going to work without his permission anyway and he doesn't like it and he's doing this to mess her around, well, he shouldn't mess people around anyway, but at the same time she's doing wrong for what she's doing, in the sense that she's doing something that she's not supposed to. I mean, it could be even more complicated than that. The guy's a miser, she doesn't have any spending money, she has to wear tatty clothing because he doesn't spend on her, so she's forced to go out to earn her own living. If it's a case like that, ask me in private, inshallah, I'll give you, you know, a particular response. I'm just giving a very general response to a general condition. But people do have unique situations sometimes. If you woke up for Sehri and during the day you come on your haze, do you break your fast and eat? Yeah. So if you are fasting as you would be, but then in the daytime the bleeding began and the menstruation began, you are allowed to eat. It's different from if your menstruation ended and you still had a few hours left for the fasting to end. You're not fasting, but there you have to abstain. But in the case here, you are allowed to eat, but not in front of people. You eat yourself in the kitchen. What's the rule for pregnant women who are keeping a fast in Ramadan and they throw up involuntarily, morning sickness? It doesn't break the fast. Involuntary vomiting does not break the fast. Does this still follow the ruling of vomiting less than more? The more and less than mouthful is only when you do it on purpose. But if it's just happening, it could be buckets, and it won't break the fast. What if you break your fast due to extreme thirst or hunger? Is this kafara or qada? If it is extreme hunger and you are going to faint or whatever, then it won't be kafara. You have to be fair to yourself. Don't be such a... that small amount of thirst, oh, I have to break my fast, and when this is going to happen to me, or whatever. You have to be strong about it. A lot of it is to do with mind over matter. But yes, absolutely, if you are in an extreme thirst situation, dehydrated, you had some major problems, vomiting, lots of vomiting, so you dehydrated your body or something like that, yes, you could.
Can you pray a qada salat during the same time as praying a nafil salat? Give the nafil niyyah to both. You can ask that in the kitab al salat, but the same ruling will apply, as I mentioned, for fasting anyway. If a person vomited due to too much food at suhoor, is this self-induced? Not directly, it is self-induced to a certain degree, but not, many people stuff themselves, but they don't necessarily vomit, do they? Their system is strong, but sometimes you're constipated, sometimes there is a problem in the system, and then it's not, as long as it has to be direct self-induction, right? So it's where you put your finger down your throat or something like that. It's direct. It's not because you overeaten. You overate. If you did overeat, that obviously is bad. But it's not. It doesn't break the fast for that reason. In times of ignorance, if a person never fasted before, does he have to make up kafara or just qada? Just qada, because you didn't fast. As I mentioned earlier, kafara is only necessary for breaking a fast, not for just missing a fast. But you have to do qada. Unless ignorance meant no deen. If it's just ignorance of just practice, being practicing, then obviously you were a believer. And when we're talking about jahiliyyah, if we're talking about before conversion, then there's nothing then anyway. But if we're talking about by jahiliyyah, that we weren't just very practicing, then you have to make up qada. If in the past when I was not practicing in Islam, I intentionally broke fast, how do I decide to make these up? I do not know how many I broke or didn't keep. Good question. For as many fasts as you break, you only have to keep one kafara. So you don't have to keep 60 for every single fast that you broke on purpose. See what I'm saying? If you broke 20 fasts in the past, you only have to keep one kafara for all of those. Now the thing is that someone might think, I broke a fast last Ramadan, I'm not going to keep the kafara yet because I might do that next Ramadan, so I only have to keep one kafara. That would be a wrong way of thinking, because you might die without that and you'd be very sinful. But yes, as many fasts as it may be, one kafara sorts them all out. Ghusl, is it rinse or do you need to gargle generally at the time of ghusl? Ghusl, it's necessary to have the water reach everywhere that is possible for it to reach, which means all the way up to the top of the nose and up to the full mouth, and gargling is the best way to do that. That's why they require gargling. But in fasting, you just wash it to the best of your ability, rinse it to the best of your ability, and just then to be careful, you do gargle at the time of Maghrib. If somebody drinks water, that would stand in place of gargling, because it's washed the throat out. In fact, more so than gargling. Do you see what I'm saying? But I wouldn't replace drinking water for gargling. I'm just saying that if somebody did happen to, after a fard bath, or during a fard bath, they actually drank water, that would be sufficient in place of gargling.